Vegas Bad Boy of Podcasting is an entertainment-based wrestling program. The opinions shared are that of the host and their guest. Some celebrity voices are impersonated and usually not well. This program is not intended for kids and certain adults. Listener's discretion is advised. You have been warned. Now let's get ready to podcast. Welcome to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. I'm your host, DJ Impact, and I got a few of the bad boys with me. Sin City, Steve.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Good, man. Living the life. Matt Michaels, hey.
Hey, what's up?
I knew that was going to be how he comes up. Well, we have a guest for you all today, and he's from Future Stars of Wrestling, not only as a professional wrestler, but also as a referee. He's also a native to Las Vegas, our town. So Vegas Bad Boy welcomes Greg Romero. Hey, Greg, how are you, man?
I even got a cool little applause. That's awesome.
You did. Studio audience, man. Where else are you going to get that from?
Yeah, right. Hell yeah.
So, Greg, let's just start off with a little background. What got you into pro wrestling? Did you start watching when you were little? What was the interest? What brought you about to it?
Well, my older cousins, they were about 4 years older than me. They were huge wrestling fans. They were big fans of, you know, because it was the late 90s. They were fans of WCW, WWF, just like everybody else.
Right.
They got me into it, and they were bigger WWF fans. But I kind of geared more toward WCW. I always thought that was a lot more fun and colorful and just, you know, a lot more going on, especially as a little kid, you know.
Right.
We love lights and flashy stuff. So they were preteen, so they loved the, you know, Attitude Era stuff.
Speaking of WCW then, I believe if my old man recollections get me right here, didn't the Misfits do a spot at WCW during those years?
They sure did, yeah.
That's right.
They did a few things with Vampiro. They would accompany him to the ring and do all kinds of run-ins and jump people. And that was actually my introduction to the Misfits.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Awesome. And I know you're a big punk rock guy. When did you get into punk rock? Was it kind of around that same time, around the teenage years, or...?
Well, I always give credit to the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater series. That was my immediate introduction to punk music and most of the bands that I've grown to love. You know, Social Distortion, Rancid, and, you know, bands like that.
Hell yeah.
I always, when people ask me, whenever I get the question, how'd you get into punk? I always, you can thank Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
No, it was. It was one of the most bitching soundtracks fucking for any video games out there, man.
Dude, yeah, every single one of them.
Yeah.
And then once I got into high school, that's when I really started to look more into, you know, lesser known bands. And it wasn't really until lately that I've gotten into, like, the local bands and local scene. Yeah.
What attracted you to the local bands?
It's just, I don't know, it sounds cliche, but it kind of, there was a point last year where I kind of felt like wrestling was kind of burning me out, and, you know, the friends that I was making, they were kind of getting their own lives, and they were all growing up and doing other stuff, having kids, getting married. It was just kind of, I was just kind of like, oh man, I don't really know what to do. So I started going out and making other friends, and those friends happened to be, you know, punks. Like, I was like, oh shit, there's actually people with my kind of similar mindset and people that, you know, people that are just as pissed off as I am.
Seriously, yeah.
So kinda, you know, that's kind of how that came about.
Yeah.
My friends in the punk scene are closest friends I could ever ask for.
What would you say is your favorite commercial punk band, and what's your favorite local punk band right now?
Huh, okay. favorite commercial punk band would be Social Distortion.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I've seen them 1.5 times in concert, and I'll explain that one later.
please say it was an injury in the pit. Please say it was.
Dude, I wish it was that cool. I promise I will tell that story.
Okay.
Favorite local punk band. I have to throw a shout out to Gob Patrol.
All right.
They're like my friends that I hang out with all the time. But right now I've been really digging the Jagoffs. They are also close friends of mine. They've actually just released a new EP. It's available on YouTube, Spotify, and all that stuff. I don't know about Spotify. I could be wrong. But anyway.
Nice.
The Jagoffs, they're really cool. They're really political. They have a lot of cool political shit going on. Like, their first album was called Smear Campaign. And just like, yeah. Yeah, I dig their stuff a lot.
Nice. Awesome. Well, it's always good when you can say that your friends are Jagoffs.
Yeah, I know, right? I always wear the Jagoffs t-shirt, and people are always like, what the fuck is that? Why does your shirt say Jagoff? That's a long story.
That's awesome.
Oh, the Social Distortion thing. Yeah. So, I got to see them in 2017, and I saw them at the House of Blues. Best concert I had seen up until that point.
Nice.
Fantastic. We had balcony seats, but it was still badass. Being able to see Mike Ness in person was a fucking dream come true.
Seriously.
So they came around again last year, and they played at the Brooklyn Bowl.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which, Brooklyn Bowl I had been to before. I had seen the Offspring there before. So I was familiar with the venue and, you know, whatever. We get there, and you guys have seen, I wear the leather vest with the spikes on the shoulders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Well, those spikes aren't even sharp. They're, like, super dull.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, no.
I get there to the front, and the night started off shitty. So the security guard, oh, you can't wear that in there.
Oh, boy.
I was like, wear what? Because he didn't say my vest. You can't wear those spikes, man. I was like, what? They're not even sharp. You can feel them. And he refused to feel them. He was acting like they were coated with poison or something. Like, no, no. And then he tells me, well, it's the look. It's the look. We can't let you in with that. I was like, it's a punk show. It's a punk show. I'm wearing a spiked leather vest. What are you talking about? So I wasn't being too argumentative. I understood. But I was just like, dude, if you just feel them, you would know they're duller than a fucking pencil. So he gets his manager, and his manager comes over, and he feels them. Nope, it's too much.
Oh, God.
All right. So I had to walk. You know how the parking and stuff is.
Yeah.
The strip, all that. I had to walk all the way back to the truck, put my vest away, go back in. It was already annoying. So we get there, and there's two opening acts. The first opening act didn't even start until an hour after the ticket said the show would be starting.
Oh, that's because they were sending all you punks back to your cars to put your spikes back.
Pretty much.
Exactly. So the opening act was this guy. Sorry, this is this guy. I wish I knew him by name because I would call him out for being fucking terrible. He comes out there and he's just this. God, I wish I had his name. That's how forgetful he was. He comes out there, and I'm a big fan of showmanship and stage presence. Even if your music's not that good, if you look badass on stage, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this guy comes out, Pony Bradshaw, that's his fucking name.
What?
Pony Bradshaw, if you're listening, you fucking suck. You asshole, I hate you. Fucking bitch. Anyway.
Nice.
Anyway, this dude comes out on stage, grabs one of the guitars, and he's got glasses, and he's got a little dirty hat on. He's got a hoodie. For some reason, he's wearing a hoodie inside the Brooklyn Bowl in the middle of the summer. Coming these shitty chords, and I'm like, what is this? What is this guy? He proceeds to play about 6 songs. Every one of them sounds the same, and none of them are good.
Of course.
So I'm like, what? I thought he was just some guy doing a sound check. That's how terrible this guy looked. So anyway, he plays for, you know, just about an hour. Then it takes another hour and a half to set up this other band.
Oh, shit.
Wow.
Yeah. This guy's name was Will Hoag. This guy wasn't that bad. He was okay. I'm pretty sure this is the same guy that did the theme song for that sitcom Still Standing.
Oh, wow.
Right. Furthest thing from a punk show you should ever be.
Right.
Yeah.
But he goes up there and he plays his generic pop songs, and it's already 10 o'clock. Oh, the show is supposed to start at 6:30. Mm. So this guy goes up there and he's like, I want to thank you guys for showing up early to see us play. I know you guys were excited for the distortion, but I appreciate you guys coming in early to see us. It's like, dickhead, we're not early. You're 3 hours late. Like, what do you mean? And then he goes and tells this story. Oh, man, I got a funny story of how we ended up on this tour. And you're going to crack up at this. I got a funny story about how we ended up on this tour. Mike Ness actually heard a song of ours, and he called his people to call our people. And I was talking, and my people talked to me directly and said, hey, Mike Ness really likes your sound. He really wants you to go on tour with them. Okay, isn't that how it always works?
Right, like, exactly.
What the fuck?
All right. You're already wasting our time with this shitty music, and then you want to tell us the story. So, anyway, I know I keep saying anyway, but I just kind of have to explain why this was only a half of an experience. So, finally, after 4 hours of everybody in the mosh pit, everybody drinking, everybody being stupid, and these aren't normal punks. These are people that were punks maybe in the 80s.
Right. Yep.
Who think they're mature now and want to have a night out where they act stupid.
Right.
No longer a lifestyle for them. It's a shitty little vacation where they can act like fucking dweebs.
Yep.
So, by the time Social Distortion comes out, this is already 11:30 at night.
Jesus.
We've been there since 5:30 having to go through security and argue about my fucking spikes on my vest at a punk show. That's besides the point. They get out there. I see Mike Ness on stage. Oh, man. Fuck yeah. This is the closest I'd ever been to Mike Ness. One of my idols, one of my heroes. They play about 2.5 songs.
Oh, no.
Oh, shit.
The crowd was so ridiculous. The sound was just terrible. There was people, not even moshing, there was just people being dumb and just, I can handle a mosh pit. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But like I said, these were just middle-aged fucking ass clowns just having an excuse to be rowdy.
Oh, man.
I was like, I can't even enjoy this. This is terrible. So we tried to walk to the back, and it was just so crowded. It was just like, what the fuck? So we ended up leaving. So that was my second Social Distortion fucking experience.
Dude.
Holy shit.
So that's why I say I've seen them 1.5 times.
Wow, man.
Because really, I've seen them one, and their fucking shitty side acts.
Yeah.
Once again, Pony Bradshaw, you son of a bitch, you robbed me, you bastard.
Fuck Pony Bradshaw.
There you go.
Yeah, that's fucking fade on sight, Pony Bradshaw, you asshole.
That's awesome, man.
God. Anyway, sorry, I rambled. I know that was a long story, but I really had to clear that up. I had to get that off my chest.
Hey, it's always a good thing, man. Yeah. So, obviously, you know, getting into pro wrestling a little bit here. How did you break into the business? What was that? What was that time period like for you?
So I was 17. It was the summer between my sophomore year and junior year, and that summer I really had nothing going on. It was just kind of high school was pissing me off, so I kind of needed something to focus on. And, you know, I was a huge wrestling fan up until that point, so I just looked up online, you know, pro wrestling schools in Vegas. The first one that came up was this school, Adrenaline Unleashed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Yeah.
I looked them up and gave them a call, and they were way across town. So I had my mom. I didn't have a driver's license at the time, so I had my mom drive me down there. And I talked to the owner there, and we signed up. I trained there for 2 months.
Okay.
Or just about 2 months. I had messed up my neck taking a clothesline.
Damn.
Oof.
And it wasn't the guy that gave me the clothesline, it wasn't his fault. It wasn't even my fault. I just wasn't taught how to bump properly.
Mm. Oh, shit.
So, the owner, Kent Wilson, he threw a bitch fit about me hurting my neck. Like, it was an inconvenience for him.
Oh, Jesus.
So, I was out for a couple weeks. I came back, and they had moved from that building to another building. And they were sharing this building with this glass window pane company. Right. It was as ridiculous as it sounds. It was a big warehouse, but half of it was all the glass windows and all these window panes and all this stuff. And then there was the other half was this little ring and their staging. And, you know, they didn't run shows out of there yet. So it was just kind of everything was set up. Mm-hmm. Well, right by the ring was a little sound, you know, mixing board and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I had gotten thrown out of the ring improperly, of course, because I wasn't trained right because they were a bunch of fucking idiots. am I allowed to cuss on that? I should have asked, first of all.
Without a doubt.
Okay, cool. What was I? Oh, I got thrown out of the ring and I landed not on the equipment, but very close to it.
Mm.
And I'd say that if I wish you could see these air quotes because they're fucking. Anyway, this guy got pissed. The owner got pissed because I landed near his equipment.
Oh, God.
Oh, Jesus.
I was like, okay, dude, this is not... All right. I know I'm only 17 and you're promising the world, but you can go fuck yourself.
Right.
So that's when I was like, I need another... Was there another wrestling school? I didn't know. I didn't. I was new to everything. I hadn't seen an indie show. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah.
So I looked it up, and I eventually found SSW.
Nice.
Which wasn't across town. It was actually right down the road from where I was. Yeah, so I wasted freaking 3 months with this place. So I signed up with FSW. I was introduced to Mike Modest, who was eventually the one that trained me and taught me pretty much everything I know. And yeah, the rest has been history. I've been there since I was 17 years old. I started there in September. I'm 26 now, and I've been there, like I said, ever since.
Wow, almost a decade. That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. Did you know Modest from the documentary, the Beyond the Mat documentary?
Yeah, so I had seen that years before, but I was always a bigger fan of TV wrestling, so I never really paid attention to any kind of indie guys, which I know that's not really a good thing to say on a podcast like this, but I never really cared for like indie wrestling, you know. So that part of the movie, since it wasn't focused on people that I was familiar with, mm-hmm, I didn't really pay attention to, you know? But yeah, once I saw him and he told me, oh yeah, I was in Beyond the Mat, I was like, oh shit, yeah, that was you, you're right.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, I also didn't know, I also had the Pro Wrestling Greatest Secrets revealed thing.
Right, yeah.
I had actually recorded that on a blank VHS tape years before, and I didn't know Mike Modest was a part of that.
Yep.
So it was cool that I was like kind of already learning from him before I had even, you know,
discovered that you were actually learning from him.
Yeah, exactly.
With your training,
yes,
what do you feel that a young wrestler who might be listening is the most important part of the training aspect? Because like you said, you started out with a company that offered training that wasn't that useful for you at that age, especially. And a lot of people, you know, nowadays like to get into wrestling around 16, 17, 18 years old and may not know what to be looking for. Is there something in your experience that you could kind of give a, kind of a foreshadow or advice on what to look for and what to choose?
Well, I at the risk of sounding like one of those old men back in my day, you know, before I would say find a reputable school, find, you know, look up who you're, who's telling you that they know what they're doing. Look up their footage, look what they've done, shit like that. Number one thing I would say before, be humble, of course. But nowadays, since pro wrestling is so focused on flippy shit and crazy dangerous stunts, I would say you even look at a wrestling school, take a gymnastics class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like, sure. I don't even say that. I don't even say that, you know, in a bad way. I, like, that's honestly, if you really want to succeed now, learn how to maneuver, learn how to flip and dive and do all that stuff, because that's pretty much what the business has become and is it's turning into.
How have you been able to adjust to that style?
Well, I don't know. I mean, as far as adjusting, I never really, like, when I put together my matches, I kind of, I don't know. That's a really hard thing to answer. When I put together matches, if I'm in there with somebody who wants to do the flips and the crazy stuff, I try to figure out where to put it and where to make it make sense to get the most out of it for them.
Right.
You know, I don't really care for it. I don't really care for that kind of style. I've always been more of a brawler and more of a, you know, not really technical, just more of, I like things to look realistic. I like people to, oh shit, is he really pissed?
Right.
You know, I like people to, like, oh shit, he really just nailed it. He really punched him in the face. So if I'm putting together a match and if I'm wrestling somebody who does some kind of cool, you know, some kind of off the ropes thing or whatever, I might call a spot where they go for it and I nail them with a forearm midway through or something like that to where they still are able to get it in, but it's not really at my expense.
Yeah.
I guess. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you're still telling you're still telling the story with them being able to get in some kind of, you know, high spot. They're still getting in their stuff, but you're keeping it within the context of, you know, telling the story, keeping it as real as possible. And that's a great, that's great advice right there.
Right, exactly. Like, for example, if I'm in there with Owen Travers, I like to use Owen Travers for example. Owen Travers is really good when he wants to be. Owen Travers is focused and he actually wants to make you look good and make himself look good at the same time. He's another one I'm able to really mesh well together with. Like, for example, we'll do a spot where he goes for the lethal injection thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he'll flip and he'll come back at me and I'll be able to catch him in the lower back with a forearm and then we'll do some stuff like that. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
Damian Drake is another example.
Yeah.
I usually, we every time we're in the ring, except for this last time, surprisingly, every time we're in the ring, we go for this spot where I throw him up for the pop-up powerbomb.
Right.
And he hits me with the big phenomenal forearm thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like things like that, for example. Like, I myself don't really, I should, you know, to, I guess, fit in better, but that's never really been my style, is to, I never really cared to do more dangerous things than I already do. Wrestling's dangerous enough.
Right. Exactly.
Like I said, when I first started, I fucked up my neck taking a basic-ass clothesline.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, I'm impressed. I'm impressed, and it's awesome when these guys can do this crazy stuff. Guys like the Young Bucks, insane. Like, that's the stuff they do is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Not really my style, and I don't really care to watch it over and over, but people, obviously, it makes money, and people react to it, and they love it, and they sell out arenas.
Right. But, you know, the question with that, though, from a wrestling perspective is it that they're selling tickets because of what they do in the ring, or are they selling tickets because of the YouTube accessibility and the characters they've become? Because I can go back when the, you know, the Bucks were just coming up in California. They were just kids and just doing their flippy shit. And until they started getting this progression where they've matured and started getting a following, it's like, I think that's what sells the merchandise. And if you look at the matches, I think sometimes the crowds are into it, but the story isn't there because you know, someone like a Chris Daniels will tell the story a little bit better in the ring and still be able to mesh with that style. So I think it's a lot of, you know, other people that they're with in the ring being able to take that stuff and tell a better story and make better matches. But at the same time, I got a feeling that you know, a lot of it's just the popularity they've created outside of the ring, branding themselves.
And that's exactly it. It's the branding. For me, I've always believed in, if you can't put it on a t-shirt, why bother doing it?
That's so true. Yeah, that's great.
If it can't go on a t-shirt or a coffee mug or something like that, then it doesn't matter. The Young Bucks, as excellent as they are, they became so much bigger when they branded themselves and when they had the Bullet Club thing, when they started, you know, the Bullet Club thing is brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
Not because of the faction, not because of all the cool stuff they do or all the members. It's the fact that if a fan is wearing a Bullet Club t-shirt, it makes them, it gives them a sense of being a part of something.
Right.
Yep.
Right. And I think that that type of branding is what's most important. The NWO t-shirts, you know, if we want to be retrospective about it. People wore the NWO shirts not because Kevin Nash or Scott Hall or Hogan did anything cool ever. as far as move-wise, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they felt like, oh, this is fucking cool. This is something, you know, current and badass. The guys nowadays, everybody, not everybody, but most of them are just so generic and plain. You can't put trunks and kick pads on a t-shirt and expect it to sell.
Right. That's a great, yeah. That's a great t-shirt right there.
Yeah. Johnny kick pads.
But you know what? That would be a challenge right there. It's like, create a t-shirt like that. Call yourself Johnny Kickpads. Don't put any matches out. Just do a YouTube, you know, channel and see if you can get in with Hot Topic and then see if you can get people just buying your shit without even knowing who the fuck you are except for what you show them.
And that's exactly it. That is 100% possible because the shit in the ring doesn't matter.
Yep.
Yeah. As much as people want to believe that five-star classics and half-an-hour matches are what's selling and what's going, that no, like that's not the reason Kenny Omega is so famous and popular right now is because he has a look. He looks marketable. Yep. He does the cool Terminator entrances and the anime stuff.
Yep.
His in-ring work, you know, it's great. I'm not a huge fan because he does silly shit like spray his fucking dick with the weird spray stuff wrestling Chris Jericho. But that's neither here nor there. That guy's making thousands more dollars than I could ever make.
Yeah.
But it's because of the branding.
Yeah,
you know, definitely. You can have as many five-star classic matches as you want, but if you're not marketable, nobody gives a shit. Like you said, that's the challenge. If you can make a shirt that says Johnny Kick Pads and sell it at Hot Topic without ever having a match, good on you.
So, Greg, just one thing that I always like to ask people, what would the average listener, maybe listening to you for either the first time or somebody that's been acquainted with you for a while, what is something that they would be surprised to know about Greg Romero?
That I've got the Backstreet Boys autograph tattooed on my leg.
What?
Oh, no.
Wow.
So obviously, we got to go into this story a little bit more. Did you meet them, or what? How did that come about?
Okay. So, the Backstreet Boys were my very first favorite band. They're still my all-time favorite group.
Wow.
Favorite entertainment act of all time.
Wow.
I know, right? It sounds bizarre, but I'm a huge, huge, huge fan of 90s music and 90s like pop music and TV and stuff like that. Like I said, the Backstreet Boys have been my number one favorite.
Wow.
I had never, ever gotten to see them in concert until earlier this year. Pain Train. You know Pain Train, Dave Mazzani?
Oh, yeah.
He actually, I hope he doesn't mind me putting this out there, but he's actually Nick Carter's boxing coach.
Oh, nice. No shit. Huh.
He overheard me talking at the show one time about the Backstreet Boys being my favorite band. And he was like, "Are you serious?" I was like, I thought he was going to make fun of me. Like, I was like, "Yeah, what of it?" So he was like, "You know that I'm Nick Carter's boxing coach, right?" I was like, "You're a filthy liar." So he was like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "Next time they're in town, like, I'll let you know. Like, I'll try to get you some tickets."
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh my God, dude, that'd be a dream come true. So that was about that was late last year. And my birthday was April 23rd this year.
Mm-hmm.
And he texted me a couple days before, and he was like, hey, are you available Wednesday?
Nice.
I was like, yeah, what's up? He was like, I've got you backstage passes to the Backstreet
Boys. Oh, my shit. Goodness.
Like, oh my God, this is the best birthday present ever. So he got us the tickets. He got me two tickets. So I went with Cutthroat Cody.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Oh, no. You just, okay, thank you. Because we're going to be talking to Cody soon, and I can't wait to bring this up.
So Cody is about 10 years older than me, something like, maybe not 10 years, 7 or 8.
Yeah.
6 or 7. He's not a fan of any kind of pop music like that. He fucking hates it. But he and I are best friends, so he loves me more than he hates this shit, which means the world to me.
That's awesome.
Oh, this
he
is
went to this show.
This is too
he went
good.
To this show with me. Yes.
This is too
again.
Good.
I know I ramble on about things. And I apologize.
No. Don't apologize, man. This is
so
awesome.
Good. This is so good. I can't wait to give him shit about going to a Backstreet concert.
Oh, dude, please. He'll be like, "Yeah, man, I did it from a buddy." So, we're backstage, and I'm just fucking fangirling. I can't even say fanboy, because I was a little girl at that point.
Wow.
Fangirling, I'm backstage, like, oh my God, I'm going to see the Backstreet Boys. So I had already planned, but I was like, okay, if I meet them, I'm going to get them to sign my leg, and I'm going to get it tattooed.
Nice.
So, I should jump back a little bit. I had met Michael Graves from the Misfits.
Mm-hmm.
Vampiro actually got me backstage at that show.
Nice.
I had met Michael Graves, and I got his autograph tattooed on my right leg.
Very cool.
Yeah, which I can't thank Vampiro enough.
Hell
Vampiro,
yeah.
If you're listening, I fucking love you. Anyway, so that's just become a thing. You know, like, I've got the Michael Graves tattoo. I kind of want to get other few celebrities tattooed, you know, their autographs tattooed.
For sure.
Anyway. The plan was, if I meet them, I want to get them to sign my leg and get it tattooed.
Nice.
Oh, we're backstage, and AJ from the Backstreet Boys, AJ McClain, walks through. He opens the door, walks through, and Cody has no idea who the fuck these guys are. He has no idea. He didn't care about the Backstreet Boys. He just knew that this was some pop band that his sister listened to and that I loved. So AJ walks by, and I'm on the inside. So Cody just gives him a head nod. He doesn't know who the fuck he is. Gives him a head nod and goes, brother. I'm thinking that he's one of the staff or something.
I could see that,
so
too.
I'm like, Cody, do you know who the fuck that was, dude? And he looks at me, he's like, no, I don't think so. So jumping ahead, I eventually got to meet AJ first.
Right on.
And had a conversation with him about tattoos. And he's like, yeah, you know, I've got a few. And I'm thinking in my head, like, yeah, dude, I know. I know every one of your tattoos. You don't have to tell me. So he's like, yeah, man, that's fine. I'll tattoo. And he signs this little... just this little insignia. And I'm like, oh, is that it? He was like, yeah. Two letters. AJ. Like, oh, yeah, you're right. So, eventually I get to meet Brian. Brian signs it. They all think it's the cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
I get to meet Nick Carter, and I tell him, yeah, we're friends with Pain Train, Dave Mazzani. And he's, oh, that's cool, man. Howie, I get to meet him. He signs it, and he was fucking with me. He goes, huh? I was like, dude, I swear to God, you can write and draw anything you want. I'm getting it tattooed. He's like, all right. He's like, all right, I won't be too mean. So he draws a little smiley face, and the smiley face, sure enough, is tattooed.
Nice.
But I swear to God, dude, that guy could have drawn a dick or fucking swastika or anything.
Oh, shit.
He could have drawn anything. I'm devoted. I would... maybe not a swastika.
No.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah.
So they all sign it. and my favorite member, Kevin, he was nowhere to be found.
Oh.
I'm like, what the fuck, dude? Where's Kevin? I need them all.
Right.
This is me being a freaking fanboy. I know it sounds ridiculous.
No.
You asked. So eventually, their manager guy or whatever, he's telling, all right, guys, we got to go. Show starts at 5. And I'm like, dude, I got to get the autograph of my favorite member. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So there was like a little room, little side room, and this door opens. Have you seen the Muppet movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know the scene where he sees Kermit the Frog for the first time?
Oh, no.
It's just like a... It's just like his silhouette and like a glow behind him.
Yeah.
Well, there he is. And inside, I'm just like, oh, my God, there he is. About 10 or 12 women pour out of this room.
Oh, shit.
There's his silhouette, right? And there's the glow behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And these women pour out on the side of each side of him. I'm like, there he is. There's God himself. So the rest of the members were just like, you know, hey, you know, what's going on? I reach for a handshake. Kevin grabs my hand, pulls me in. How you doing, bro? And gives me like a bro hug, you know?
Oh, man.
And again, the 7-year-old boy in me is just like screaming. So I'm like, hey, would you sign my leg? Because I want to get it tattooed. And he's like, oh, yeah? And honestly, it was hilarious because he's like a foot taller than me. I didn't realize how tall he was.
Mm.
So I felt like a child. I felt like it wasn't 2019. It was 1999. I was partying like it's 1999. Anyway, his manager is bitching at him because he was the last one to come through because he was in there partying with all these girls.
Mm-hmm.
His manager's yelling at him, Kevin, man, we gotta go. And he's like, all right, man, take it easy. All right. And he walks me over to there's like, you know, couches and tables and stuff. He's like, all right, man, where do you want me to sign? And his manager, like I said, is bitching at him the whole time. So he's like, right here? I'm like, wherever you want, Kevin. My leg is yours.
Oh, man.
I didn't say that. I didn't say it out loud. But
okay.
So, again, he keeps telling his manager, hey, man, relax. So he signs it. He's like, there you go, man. Fucking gives me another bro hug. Walks back in. I was like, oh, my God, what the fuck just happened? So this was before the concert. So we enjoyed the concert and everything. That night I fucking went and got them all tattooed. The tattoo artist was cracking up. He's like, you seriously want me to tattoo these guys' autographs on your leg? I'm like, yeah, please. So yeah, that was... I had the Backstreet Boys' autographs tattooed on my leg.
Nice.
I got to go straight contrast right off the, you know, just off of that story. So please. Then what was it like meeting Merle Allen?
Oh.
talk about a, you know, just, I mean, that is amazing that, you know, here you are, you're a Backstreet Boys mark since you were a kid. And now here you are meeting Gigi Allen's brother.
Yeah, dude.
And so, seeing them. That's awesome, man.
So I'm a fan of Gigi's music.
Yeah.
But Gigi Allen, I'm going to go on record as saying Gigi Allen is nobody to look up to.
Yep.
The novelty is funny. It's very shocking. People are grossed out when you wear Gigi Allen merch.
Yeah.
So I knew, I was like, all right, this is the Murder Junkies, man. This is fucking, GG's gone, but Murder Junkies are still going strong. So I get to the show and I'm thinking, ah, man, Merle's going to be fucking, he's going to be a dick, right? Like, he's got to be out of his mind. So I walk up to the merch table. I'm a little nervous. And I'm just like, hey, man, how's it going? and he was eating. He was like eating out of a styrofoam box. And he's like, "Hey, man, how you doing?" I was like, "Oh." So I went. I reached out for a handshake, but I didn't realize he was eating. So I was like, "Oh, sorry, man." He's like, "Oh, nope, don't be sorry at all, my friend." Like, "Oh shit, all right." So I asked him. I was like, "Can I take a picture with you?" I guess he had a policy like no pictures until after the show. But he was super, super friendly, dude. Like, super. I was surprised.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that show was pretty out of. It was pretty insane, dude.
Yeah, they
it was definitely a Murder Junkies show.
They definitely recreate the magic, and I say magic very, very loosely.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. After the show, well, at the end of the show, I should say, their drummer. I'm not sure who the guy was. I believe he played for a couple other bands. Not sure what his name is. But anyway, he plays this sick-ass drum solo. Merle gets off the stage, everybody else gets off the stage, and this dude's just fucking jamming on this drum solo. And I didn't realize it because I didn't see him get up on stage, but he was ass naked.
Yep.
Completely balls naked, sitting there playing this fucking sick-ass drum solo. Like, eat your heart out, fucking John Bonham Fox. I mean, John Bonham, sorry. That was a Freudian slip. I have a good friend, John Bonham Fox. He's named after John Bonham.
Anyways. Wow. That's awesome.
Anyway, he's playing this drum solo. So he's done, throws down one of his drumsticks, and he's just sweating to death, and he's just fucking... He just played with the Murder Junkies. He's fucking going crazy. Mm-hmm. He stands up, dick's swinging, standing there, walks to the edge of the stage and holds up his drumstick.
Yep.
And I'm like, what is he doing?
Yep.
Points out a girl from the crowd.
Yep.
And she's like, yeah. He hands her the drumstick, bends over, spreads his ass open. I'm like, what? What? What the fuck, dude? So, my good friend Tyler, who's really big in the punk scene, one of my really close friends, he's like, yeah, dude, he's going to shove it up his ass. What? I'm sickened but curious. So I walk up. I get close, because we're just at the dive bar. This is a small venue, son. I've watched it with my own eyes. This chick shoved a drumstick up the Murder Junkies drummer's asshole.
Jesus Christ. Man.
Like, dude, man. This has been a hell of a year. I've seen the Backstreet Boys, and I've seen the Murder Junkies drummer get drumsticks shoved up his ass. Screaming at her. Screaming at her. Twist! Twist that!
Fuck.
I'm like, whoa. Punk fucking rock.
And just so everyone who's listening, if you're not aware of them, check out the Murder Junkies. The drummer is Dino Sex. And
Yes.
It's Dino Sex. There's a documentary out there, Showtime had run, coincided with Gigi Allen's 20th anniversary of his death. And oddly enough, one of the scenes was Merle sitting with Dino, getting Dino to sign the drumsticks that had been shoved up his ass so they could sell them at, you know, the concerts or online.
Man.
That's one hell of a souvenir. Shit.
Literally.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
And then they've also got the paintings.
Yeah.
Made out of Gigi's blood and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't condone any of that, but it's still fucking hardcore.
That's yeah. Wow. You've literally seen some serious shit this year.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, and among meeting Merle, I've also met a few, like, really, you know, big names in punk rock. Dwayne Peters from the U.S. Bombs.
Nice.
I got to meet him. He was really cool. I had him sign my copy of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4. Sweet. Yeah, first time I ever heard the U.S. Bombs was on that soundtrack, so I figured it was fitting.
Nice.
Rob Chaos from Total Chaos.
Yeah.
Lenny Mental from the Besmirchers. He was super cool.
Nice.
There's a few. Like I said, last year I got to meet Michael Graves. Signed my leg, got that tattooed. Earlier last year, I was doing extra work for WWE.
Okay.
And, We were there. We had done the loop. We did Sunday was Elimination Chamber. Monday was Raw.
Right.
And Tuesday was SmackDown. And we were in Vegas, L.A., or Vegas, Anaheim, and then L.A.
Right.
Hmm. Well, L.A., we were sitting there. We're sitting there in catering. Everybody hangs out in catering. So one of the guys we were sitting with, one of the other wrestlers, he was like, "Hey, is that Glenn Danzig?" And I thought he was just talking about like some ugly woman or something. I thought he was making a joke. Like legit, I was like, "Yeah, red bet, right?" And I turn around, and there was Glenn Danzig talking to X-Pac.
Oh shit!
I'm like, what? So
awesome.
I got up and I ran over there and I said hi to X-Pac. I'm like, "Hello, hi. I'm so sorry to interrupt." Danzig. So one thing you should know about me is I get starstruck like a motherfucker.
I think we're finding that
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
I know I've mentioned that a few times, but it's a thing. Like I get starstruck. Not really with wrestlers or anything, but like musicians and whatever actors stuff. So I got to talk to him, but he was a little bit standoffish. He wasn't rude by any means, but I felt like if I kept trying to talk to him, he would have been like, you know, "Fuck off, man." But he was cool, really nice. I told him, "Hey, man, I got to see you guys in concert last year, whatever." "Oh, thanks, bro. I appreciate that."
Nice.
Typical Glenn Danzig fashion. Yeah, and then like I said, later that year, I got to meet Michael Graves. So it was cool that I got to meet both singers of the Misfits.
Yeah.
In the same year.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Like I said, Vampiro hooked me up with that Michael Graves thing.
That's yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, he actually did an FSW show with us at Neonopolis. And Michael Graves was playing down the road at Beauty Bar. Beauty Bar, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I was painted up because I had done a casket match with Owen Travers that night.
Mm.
So every Halloween show and every casket match I do like the Misfits skull paint. And I do the devil lock and everything.
Nice.
And Vampiro, who I'd interacted with a few times, he was like, "Hey, man." He's like, "You going to that show tonight?" Which, for some reason, my Danzig impression and my Vampiro impression are the same. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to try to go after the show. He's like, "Yeah, Mike's been bugging me to come down and say hi to him, but I don't know if I feel like it." And I'm like, "Mike?" He's like, yeah, Graves.
Oh, like, shit.
"Oh my god, you're still friends with him?" I was like, "Dude, please." I was like, I hate to ask you, but like, could you like get me back there?" He's like, "Yeah, if I decide to go, yeah, that's fine." So the whole night I'm just like, "Dude, oh my god, I hope he has the energy to go." So eventually, you know, the night ended and he was like, "All right, bro, let's go."
Nice.
Hell yeah.
I'm like, "Dude, are we going?" So we walked down the road and I had already taken off my face paint and stuff, but we got there and Michael Graves was so nice, dude. Way more friendly than Danzy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was just saying hi to Vampiro and he like gave me a hug and stuff, like, "Hey, man, it's really nice to meet you." I was like, "Dude, this is fucking awesome."
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, again, Vampiro, if you're listening, I appreciate you so much.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely, man.
I'm trying to think of more things to ramble on about. I hope I don't. Overstaying my welcome.
I think we have something actually right up the rambling aspect here.
Yeah, so Greg, what we like to do is just a simple word association. So I'm just going to say the name of somebody in the business or a promotion, something along that line. And I just want for you to tell me the first thing that pops into your head, okay?
Okay.
All right, awesome. So we're going to do this for 70 seconds, and let's get it on the clock.
Sin City Steve, 70 deadly seconds starts now.
Future stars of wrestling.
Home.
Mike Modest.
Bastard.
Nick Bugatti.
Bitch ass.
Remy Marcel.
The Fro, brother.
West Coast Wrestling Connection.
West Coast, oh my god. Money.
Ricky Gibson.
Oh, that's my boy.
Gangrel.
Gangster fuck.
Mikey O'Shea.
Mikey O'Shea. Heavy.
Ricky Tenacious.
Creative.
Damian Drake.
Flipping.
Sin Bodhi.
Weird.
Funny Bone.
Open fuck.
And last but certainly not least, your boy Vampiro.
Oh man, incredible.
Awesome, awesome, man.
He got it through.
He survived. He did.
Wow. He did.
Oh yeah. 70 seconds?
That's right.
So, really quick, as we wrap up here, and I know that some of the listeners are going, fuck, you guys didn't even talk wrestling. Which is fine.
I mean, we can if you guys... I have time to do that. That's fine.
That's all right, because we'll talk wrestling at a later point. We'll definitely get you back. But one of the things I have to have you do, and I'm so like fascinated with, is you participate in something called Television TV.
Yes, sir.
And I, myself, have actually worked with and been acquaintances with one Dr. Phil McGraw.
Yes.
So go ahead and give the listeners a little advice from Dr. Phil McGraw on the wrestling business.
Well, I mean, the biggest piece of advice I can give you is to not be such a goddamn mark for yourself. And as far as the fans are concerned, y'all need to quit being so damn forgiving with all these leg smacking sons of bitches in the business. Y'all eat this shit up, and it's phony, it's crap, it is bullshit. You want a leg smack? You can do it all day. But you can catch me outside. You want to do that shit? No, seriously, in all seriousness, stop smacking your fucking leg, guys.
That is awesome. Greg, man, thanks, man, for hanging out with us, man. This has been fun. We definitely got to have you back on again.
Hell yeah, sure. Please. I've got plenty more to say, so.
Awesome. And are you on IG or Facebook or Twitter?
Yeah, Facebook. Just look me up, Greg Romero.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the link or anything, but sure. Instagram, it's Greg Romero LV. Go ahead and check me out. Throw me a few likes or dislikes until it.
No doubt. All right. Well, okay.
That's all I really have for social media, though. I don't really mess with all that stuff.
I understand.
I should.
Impact knows a thing too about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Just stay away. All right, everyone, Greg Romero. All
right. Thank you guys so much for having me. I appreciate you guys.
All right, no doubt.
Biggest Bad Boys of Podcasting.